BRF meeting, April 11, 2016.
Ready, Lee? All right, time for the bus and rail subcommittee. Good afternoon, everyone. All right. All right. Before we get started, I'd like to, I guess, take a moment of silence to think of Brian and his wife. So let's take a moment of silence before we begin. All right, we're going to start with the introductions. I'm Roger Stanley, second vice chair, and to my right.
And I'm Bill Stemmer from Arlington, Virginia, and I'm vice chair of this
commission. Hello, everyone. This is Brittany Farber from Washington, D.C.
Good night, Chief Fairfax County.
Twitter account,
And that person is Brian Anderson. So that was the reason for the quick response for that. And after the meeting, I spoke with Dr. B, who informed me that Jim Hamry, who was presenting afterwards, said they were looking to hire an individual that would be responsible for monitoring that, I think, on a regular basis. So, Dr. B, I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that or not. So that was that, okay? And the other, I went back, I sent a request over to customer service as far as the top complaints that they receive. And I think that the committee had asked for maybe the top 10. They keep it on the top 5 category. So for the top 5 complaints for bus service are, unsafe operation, rude, discourteous, and uncooperative, the bus not showing up, failure to service or stop, and a delay or a late bus. Now, for rail, the top 5 again complaints are air conditioning or heating, delay or late, inadequate service, maintenance problems, and rude, discourteous, and uncooperative, I'm assuming operators or station managers. And then, I know it's not a bus rail issue, but, and then Metro Access was like the next category in which they monitor, or at least the next mode. Okay, so I mean, I have the numbers for this, the number of complaints that were received for each month for the fiscal year. I didn't know if the group, if the committee is interested in receiving those numbers or looking at those numbers.
Sure.
Okay. I'll provide this to Dr. B. And
well, Mr. Babbitt, how those complaints are they all coming from the web portal, or are they all calls, or are they all personal complaints? How are they collected?
These are the ones that are either called into customer service. We have the 637-7000, 637-0128 is specifically for Metro Access complaints. And then the 637, I think is, no, it's another number, 28, 6138 or 28 is one for customer service. It's a separate number. You can connect through the 637-7000 and get a customer service tracking number. Or you can email, and that's another way that those are also included in the numbers that you'll receive. You know, I mean, as far as the ones that I have, I believe, and I'll have to check with Mr. Franklin to see if they're broken down by email or what, or how we can maybe segregate those numbers out.
So these ones are through telephone or email?
Yes.
Are there other routes of customer complaint? Are there other, like, there's a complaint section on the website?
Yes. Well, that would be email. Yeah, because you can email that customer, I think it's CSBC. Email at customer service. I'm not exactly sure what the email address for that is, but there is an option there that a customer can file a complaint.
So is there a complaint form where you can just check out the complaint, or are you required to write an email?
Well, you can.
Or both email.
Yeah, there are complaint forms as well. And I think some of those, they're still stashed, but they're still available at the customer service counter. You know, for instance, that the station managers have those on hand as well.
But are they not available online?
Yes.
They are available online?
Yes.
So are those email, or are they considered a different format?
Well, that's what I was saying. I'll check with Mr. Franklin to see if email complaints are included in the numbers that you'll be sent.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Randy.
When you complain by email, you go to Metro Open Source and you pull up a customer comment form. And it has check boxes that you can check, but it also has room for a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can also
give them accommodations.
Go ahead, Charlie.
When I ran a ombudsman-like program in Massachusetts, we had similar statistics as to the frequency of complaints. And then we had a section called considerations. That was factors that played into the situation. And then we had a set of recommendations on how to alleviate, you know, hopefully cure or get rid of the problem altogether. Having said that, I hear what you're saying about the top five complaints in Ross and Rio. And I wonder, do you have any information as to any variation on whether those complaints rise or fall in frequency, depending on time of year, depending on any particular circumstance? And more importantly, have you ever offered any recommendations to the staff that are dealing with whatever the problem might be as to what to do about it, and has that had any effect?
Well, many times, the complaints that come to my level, or at least that I get involved with, the statistics that I'm referring to were provided to me by Jeremy Franklin, and Dr. B just pointed out that he's on the agenda at 5:30. So you may you can ask him more directly. But in my interactions, or at least in my resolution of some of the issues that have been brought to the Office of ADA Programs, we have been involved in a majority of the resolutions. For instance, we've received complaints about operators not lowering the lifts, which has resulted in Dr. B going out and providing additional ADA training to operators as to, you know, what the requirements of their job are, which is then some of them saying individuals don't look like they need the lift or the ramp deployed. And what we're emphasizing to them is that if someone requests that you lower the bus or deploy the lift, you're to do that. And it's not up to you to determine what a person with a disability looks like. You know, if the request is made, then you're to adhere to it. Even as far as like we've had some issues for the ombudsman where I've been involved with rail station managers and people wanting to use the accessible gates because they have a particular service animal. And the station manager, and it's resulted in a policy change that Mr. Blake did as far as like using the service gates that some of the rail operations people, you know, weren't aware of, or at least it has resulted in a policy change. When someone asks to go through the service gates, they can do so. But they have to ask.
if I can just follow up for a second on that, I would then think that over time, the frequency of complaints in particular areas would decrease or even be eliminated to be replaced by other areas of concern. Has that been the case?
Well, hold on.
I think I hear where you're going, Charlie, saying if there's a rash of complaints about the rats, that there would be a major focus on deploying the rats, for example, and that probably would go away, but then there'll be new complaints about not helping with priority seating and stuff to that effect. Perhaps customer service is tracking something similar to that. What we do is track individual complaints because we want resolution, and the trainings overall are supposed to address these complaints. Now, I'll admit, and when I'm doing, for example, rail station attendant or station manager follow-up training, if there's been a rash of complaints about the elevators lately, and one of the things I would talk about with those station managers and continue to emphasize, the first thing you need to do when you get to work, maybe there's some other protocol things you need to do, but you need to check on the status of the elevators. And yes, I would hope to see that come down, but I think the primary way that will occur is once punishments happen. And punishments are usually being done when somebody does something like we had to do the other day when it came to a customer being treated poorly, for lack of a better word, when it came to a bus ramp request. And once I saw the video and I heard the statement, it was terrible. But I wouldn't want to judge customer service and the effectiveness based on type and do we move away from one type to another. What we're trying to base customer service success on is a great reduction in the complaints altogether.
Okay. Anything else for Mr. Stevens?
No, I don't have anything else for this time.
All right, so thank you, Mr. Stevens.
Yes, and I come to the table. This is your 5 p.m. line item agenda. This is the passenger information display system, a pilot project. You've met Chief Asante on many occasions. He's been one of our more responsive colleagues to this particular committee. So they have some more good news for you. Well, let me not check. They have news for you, and we'll go from there. So Chief Asante.
Hello, thank you for having me again. The purpose today is to talk to you all about the PITS car count color change. And what this is, I'll just give you a brief background of the topic. DC's Department of Transportation wrote to WMATA to call attention to issues of platform crowding at Gallery Place Metro Station. They also requested that we review this information and try to come up with a low-cost solution to improve the situation there. In order to accommodate this request, WMATA's IT department was asked to see if we can change the car count number to provide more visibility from different areas on the platform.
So I want to interrupt just real quick. So, Gallery Place, there's a lot of platform crowding for any of you who travel there. One of our board members and his team from DDOT came up with some outstanding list of recommendations. The recommendations were sent to a variety of departments within Metro, including my office, the ADA policy and plan, to make sure any recommendation or idea would be compliant with the ADA. So we were all hands-on in this. And one of the more noticeable features features right off the bat. If you all go to Gallery Place, and now we're doing it, I think it's at every station, or it's coming to every station. If you look on the platform floor, you see the markings where you can tell between the stop point for a six-car train versus an eight-car train. That was just one of the simple, we're looking for low-cost but very helpful solutions to help ease overcrowding. There were a few others, we can talk about it, but this is one. And so our PID, our passenger information display systems that are on the platform, we've had a lot of talk about them for a variety of reasons. And you've heard us also say we're going to add to them, not to the PID itself, but other displays to help expand the amount of information we display. But here's an improvement our colleagues want to bring to your attention in reference to the existing PIDs on the platforms. Is that correct?
That is correct. And in conjunction with the floor decals that Kristen was just speaking of, that determine where the stopping point for a six-car train or eight-car train is located, what we decided to do was also change the color that is displayed on the PID sign itself. So for an eight-car train, you will see the eight listed in red, and the six-car train, which is the most commonly used car pair, will still be listed in the amber color. So if you can go to the next slide, you can see that now there's two different colors listed for the six and the eight. What this is hopefully going to impact is visibility from a larger range down the platform. So again, the expected results to reduce crowding and congestion near and around the current PID signs, allow riders to know whether an eight or six car train is arriving from farther distances. And this will be a system-wide change across all metro stations. That way, hopefully, we can reduce crowding, not just at Gallery Place, but also system-wide. And again, this is in conjunction to help with those decals that are wayfinding on the floor for right now. That's it, and we just wanted to, you know, make you guys aware of that as always.
Thank you, Mr. Zarte. Can you go back to the slide displaying the different color? Are those different colors from there?
Yeah.
This one I can almost see, and that one I can't see the difference at all.
Yeah, the picture makes it a little difficult, but the six is the same color as all of the text in the three lines below the header, and the eight is actually the same color as the header, which is a red color. Yeah.
It doesn't come across well on this display.
Yeah, it doesn't display well.
So let me just ask a question on the
map.
Up there I can kind of see the glare. So we're trying to show a picture here. The picture obviously is within the building. It's not actually on the platform.
Right. Yeah, right.
So my question.
I know they have a different display technology.
Right.
So,
but if we saw this in the system, I mean, would I, without even the best myself, would I be able to tell that that 8 is really supposed to be red?
Yes. So
it's not going to be blurry or glaring like this.
Correct.
I can see that. That's just the display right here. The second thing that I'm wondering, or another thing I'm wondering, is about the colors. Red normally means hazard. In our culture, red means trouble. So when you put a car number in red, that who knows what people might interpret it as. Yeah, if I see red there, I'm inclined not to go to that train because it's a red train, whatever that means. And I would assume that means bad.
Well, this is just a higher visibility to distinguish the difference between a six and eight car.
That's the critical point. The red is not higher visibility on this black background.
Well, the issue is with this current technology for the existing PID system, we're only limited to red, amber, and green. And being as though amber and green are so close in color, it would be hard to distinguish.
Green would be a good distinction on this case.
Okay. Well, this is a change that could be rolled back in the future. So that's something that we can take note of and see if green would provide a higher visibility rather than red.
I think green would be a better distinction.
So just for clarity, the comment is that green would be more sufficient than a red color.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Brianne?
Hi, Arthur. My name is Clintonia, medical patient. And my office is running near that patient. So very often, especially now, it's a tourist season, so it's the heat up. Tourists will put up platforms, just like in Chinatown. So when the 8 or 6 cars happen, especially during the rush hour, most of the museum closed. So the platform really gets jammed for both people leaving work and the museum at rush hour. It's just crazy. It's my funny and natural patient. And it's a pretty similar route by that west and a few of the other smaller patients. And when I mean by smaller, it's at the platform. It's much narrower than it is in the train station. And so the biggest shadow that I've had when I walk on that platform is very often when the stairs and the escalator are coming down from the platform. And you're trying to go around the escalator, and you're in between where the train is and where the escalator is. That amount of platform space is very extremely narrow. And it's always in contact with the current. And they're always, you know, kind of looking back. And you, as the EV native, know your way. You're like, get out of my way, people. I know where I'm going now, you know? So it was a huge clincher for me. I immediately noticed it. Last week, I don't know when it happened, but for me it was last week, they put down the yellow marker down on the platform and said, does this car stop here? What a huge difference it made. I could tell you it was a huge, huge difference. Even the tourists were benefiting from it and going, oh, I go over here and I go over here. So I think that addition to not only the PIR system is a big help, a really big help. So I really wanted to point out that I personally already noticed changes that happened by the people's reaction on the platform. So I really appreciate the yellow, big yellow marker. The only concern I have about it is maybe the wear and tear, and if you have to keep replacing it, it doesn't look like it will last a long time. It looks brand new now, but hopefully it still looks that way in the end of the summer and the tourist season, you know. So that's not how people, but I am already enjoying it. So definitely thank you very much for doing that. Yellow marker on the platform. The other thing is it may not be accessible for blind or low vision people, so that's another challenge. But it's almost the same thing for me as a deaf or blind hearing person. I don't have to perform with public announcements, but then I have to look at the PIN. So for me, I enjoy your presentation on kids, because it's very important to me at least at the point of hearing process to see what's going on. I like their presentation about maybe the green being changed, because I'm a newbie to the city. I might go, ooh, the red at the red flag. So, but as somebody who's already been here 12 years or more, I don't worry too much about the red color. But maybe have good points of perception, and that's one of the things you should consider about. But I really wanted to compliment you on the yellow marker on the platform, and like definitely make it a possibility. So thank you.
Thank you. Like me, I
kind of
think that I agree with Bill and Brianne basically about the red, because I think with the red it always means stop or. Kind of makes you want to think you would stop where there's, or you know, when it, like emergency. And I kind of agree with that it should be the green, because it's kind of making you want to get inside the train. And I kind of think it's more better that we have green instead of red like that, and it's kind of back door better if it's green than red. I agree. Yes, Garney.
I like to think that two on the red because people with low vision, it sets a small distinction between the amber and the red. That, you know, the contrast between the green and the amber may be equal. I'll check with people with low vision to see. I know they have difficulty distinguishing colors.
Yeah, I was just going to echo that the details on the platforms are a huge help. I go through Gallery Place twice a day, every day, and that's wonderful. And I hope they do last.
All right, any more questions for Mr. Sante, Chief Sante? All right, well, thank you, Mr. Sante. Thank you again. All right, next speaker is Mr. Franklin.
Yeah, he's not here yet. Dr. B is out looking for him. So, try again with public comment, but I don't see any public comment. Okay. No, not yet, because normally I would say that, but no, we're waiting for Mr. Franklin.
Ms. Rush, you have something?
Ms. Rush has some comments?
Yes. I know we, Denise Rush, Super Franklin. I know we can't do anything about the crime and safety on the rail, but today another stabbing. And Dean would, could we get more, seems like certain stations are having more crime than others. Can we get some more police on these stations where they're, do you get a regular report on, you know, who has more crime than others? You know, what stations? But all of them are having different issues, but some are having more than others. Anacostia, Deanwood, Gallaudet Station, Gallaudet Place.
This is the housing security at Gallaudet Place.
So what I can tell you, what I know, well, one, for the details, specifics you're asking for, I think we'll have to ask the Metro Transit Police Department to come back and provide the committee a briefing. What I do know is that we're actively engaging in a significant recruitment of new police officers, not just to replace retiring officers, but to really beef up our ranks. And our new general manager is in full support of increasing the number of Metro Transit police officers because he recognizes safety is paramount, not only in terms of operations, but just in terms of customers being able to enter and exit our system safely. Otherwise, you won't use it. And those of you who are eligible would just stick with Metro Access. But that's not the ideal option for either you or the agency. So I do know that there's a strong, active recruitment to increase the number of Metro Transit police officers, but to bring you very specific details about that recruitment effort as well as statistics on the crimes that are occurring within our system, we'll schedule a briefing for you by the Metro Transit Police Department during next month's meeting.
Sure.
And this may be serious enough that we may schedule the briefing at the regular AAC so that it can be, the message can be told to as many members as possible. Because if you're expressing the concerns as strongly as you are tonight, I think it could be an issue. You just need to take it right to the full committee.
Well, we're pushing the fixed route. We're doing training. But why? I'm staying on the Metro Access. I mean, nothing's perfect because it's running rampant with people who don't have disabilities. They're being robbed, they're hit in the head, people shot and stabbed. It is. First 15 minutes of the news, 5 or 10 minutes is Metro Access, another one every day. And it's discouraging. It makes you scared to use the system. And there's not, and these are people, there's nothing wrong with them. They're just trying to go to work or wherever they're going. They just, children are attacking. They're attacking people on the escalators, stabbing and shooting. And something has got to be done. But I mean, it's not Mama's fault that a group of people decide that today we're just going to rob somebody. Let's just pick somebody. But if we had more police presence, maybe it would deter them from doing it. But right here now, they're shooting police officers, so, you know, it's rough.
And another thing I did forget to mention, even out now, and I think they've already begun being deployed, or they soon will be, our police officers will be wearing brighter vests so that they're much more visible to all passengers, those who may have nefarious deeds in mind, as well as those of most of you who are law-abiding citizens. So that's another effort our police department is undertaking, to be more visible just in terms of their uniform.
Yeah, I understand in the news, I see a lot when they say they're going to have uniformed police on the trail. Wouldn't they do a better job if they had plain clothes by people? You know, where they can really get into the center of it right up immediately. I mean, especially young people, when they see somebody with a uniform or a PA with everything else, the uniform guy gets out of there.
I hear you. I'm not an expert in law enforcement, so my guess, if I had to guess, I think we may probably try that, but I think what we're probably trying to do now is deter that behavior. If it means that these folks are going to behave even for that moment in time, I think that's our goal right now, is to deter the crime altogether, not necessarily catch them after they've committed the crime. That would be my guess. But again, we'll let the MTPD express what they've done, both undercover as well as uniform. But given that they're going at this this extent to be visible, I think the idea has been that visibility is a better deterrent than potential being captured. Because everybody knows, I mean, when you go into a metro station, we have cameras everywhere. Cameras and usually hundreds of witnesses. So if you're going into a metro station to commit a crime, it's almost not like you're trying to evade capture, if you get my drift. I mean, you're going to be captured. You just got to think that. So I think what we're probably trying to do now is just be visible and tell that person, even if you think you're going to get away with it, no, the police officer is right here, so don't do it. Take it somewhere else or go home and pray or do something, but don't commit a crime and don't commit it on our system. And Mr. Irvin Fry would like to answer.
Yes, good evening, everyone. I use the red line, the green line, and the orange line, and I can honestly say I've been paying attention. I have seen an uptick in transit police being on the train, on the platform, riding a few stops, getting off, getting on another train. I've been paying close attention to that, so they have been making a conscious effort to have more officers in the system.
Actually, you answered my question or and comment before I even had a chance to make it. Visibility is a deterrence, absolutely, and so I'm glad to hear that that the system is erring on the side of visibility versus the latter, which is often after the fact. I wonder, is there a Does the security group have a sharing of information with other similar-sized metro systems throughout the country? And I ask only because I know I feel a distinct presence of security police on the trains and buses in New York City. And I'm sure this may be the case in others. So my question is there a sharing of information to pool, let's say, best practices?
I would be very confident in guessing that the answer is yes, but we'll let the police confirm that. But I'm pretty sure, I mean, we do share through APTA and through other agencies and organizations across a range of transit issues, so it would shock me that safety and security on the system would not be a part of that, especially given the world we're living in now. But also, what I thought you were going to say is, do we share information with the local police and try to be a buffer? I do know we do that. And that's where a lot of our efforts are. So local police, as they're coming towards the system or running away from the system, our police within the system, there is a lot of that kind of coordination. But in terms of working together across agency lines and other areas, I'm pretty sure we do.
Yeah. I'm talking more about the sharing of tactics.
No,
the sharing,
you know,
sharing the best practices.
Yes, best practices. I would be shocked if we weren't. But I'll say yes, we are, but I'll let MTP confirm.
I noticed, for example, that in the New York City subway system, the police are constantly moving in and out of cars with their uniforms or whatever they're wearing. You never know if you're in a car whether suddenly a policeman will be present, and then that person may leave after one stop and go to another car. And so there's that element of surprise that the riders are constantly aware of.
I think that goes to what Mr. Fry was saying. He's been noticing that more on some of the, let's say, testier lines, if you will, for lack of a better word. A couple more questions. Ms. Rush, Ms. Bush.
Denise, go ahead.
When you do catch them, and we just do that smack on the hand thing that we have a tendency to do, that we've got to be serious about the group of kids that beat up this person and then they got off with that or it was dismissed or whatever. We can't keep just smacking people on the hands. That's why the thieves keep stealing and the murderers keep murdering and the rapists keep raping, because the system lets them out without showing an example. If you do this, this is going to happen. So they, you know, I get that smack on the hand and I go back and do it again. So are there going to be seriousness about what people are doing on you knocking a person in the head, they've got a concussion, they're bleeding or whatever, you're robbing people and you're catching them and you see it on camera. Are they getting time, or are they just getting a smack on the hand?
Now you step into political waters there, so I don't want to go to, you know, I have a political background, I don't want to go into that today. I would say you can ask the NCPD police. Now, you know, the way people who are accused of crimes are prosecuted, it's up to the local prosecution team to determine the penalties that they will be charged with, or crimes they will be charged with, and the potential penalty for such crimes. Metro Police can make the arrest and do that, but in the end, it's not Metro that's trying that in court. So we'll leave it at that. But I'll let the police tell you what has happened in terms of some of the cases being adjudicated. Ms. Bush.
Darnish, go ahead.
Darnish, Henry Bush, Washington, D.C. I have a question. When the police, I think it's the chief or the representative, when he came before, he said they had over 400 security officers. And so my concern is it customary for the officers to travel along on a traveling pace? And also, I would like to know whether they do any community outreach at high schools and things like that, since students usually
snatch and grab and you know, respond in a group?
That's another question. I'll admit I'm not totally prepared tonight for a safety conversation that kind of came up. So we'll follow up police tactics in terms of single or double units. I'm really not sure, to be honest with you. I really don't know that. In terms of outreach, again, I would be surprised if we didn't. I do know that our marketing team, I mean, you could mention marketing, but we tried it at MTA in Baltimore and worked in the same director who's that is not here as well. A lot of us in Baltimore, so I kind of know here. But she created a program called Respect Your Ride, where we kind of awarded children with the opportunity to get discounts from local stores. There's a partnership between local stores and the schools themselves based on the behavior of the children using public transportation. And Respect Your Ride is going to capture some of them. Some of them already, most of the kids are already good. There's a handful who are the bad apples, if you will. We can also get an update from her as to any success she's seen in that program here in the Washington, D.C. area in terms of outreach. But again, I think that would be the police to tell us what are they doing. And this is a challenge all over as public school systems, much like human services agencies, when monies were cut, one of the things they did is say children get to school with public transportation. And we're seeing it kind of everywhere. So that's a challenge, and we have to face it. We can't duck and hide because it's impacting our regular fair paying customers. So, you know, it's affecting adults trying to go to work. So we have to make this work, and we'll get the police department in here to tell us what they're doing.
Lately, I've seen, you know, more cars marked Metro Transit Police. So I'm concerned and wondering if they actually check the bus stops in the morning, like if they, you know, show their visibility. The bus stops, which most of the time I've seen, is in the evening.
Gotcha.
You know, during the middle of the day. And I travel real early in the morning, so
I guess. All I can say, again, and I apologize for always referring back to my prior, because I just spent so much time there, that's where I saw a variety of aspects of a transit agency. And I can tell you, the Baltimore region is much smaller than this. So you can imagine a police department and the transit system, our subway system in Baltimore is much smaller than this. So if you can imagine a service area of over 1,800 square miles, and 91 stations. And keep in mind, one thing I saw another statistic. If you look at like the seven largest transit agencies in New York has an average of like just over one elevator or escalator per station. Boston was like 1.5 elevator or escalator. I mean, if you add the two up, how many per station? Metro was nearly 10. Elevator, escalator. So we're the most successful. There's no question about that. And I know there's some folks who talk about the elevator sometimes, but I don't think performance is pretty good here. But when you think about 91 stations, over 900 elevator or escalators, and 11,000 bus stops, imagine 400 police officers. So this has to be a team effort. And I think, and again, I'm not speaking for the police department, we'll let them speak. I think the methodology is for Metro Police to use as much of its resources within the Metro Rail station while asking our local partners who have their cars and are monitoring their communities as a whole to also keep a special lookout on the bus stop as well. That would be my guess is what the police department would say.
JB has something to talk about?
Yep, that's it, Mr. Chair. I'd like to bring to everyone's attention a Metro TV. We had a member of our team to participate in Metro TV again. I think you all remember a couple of months back. Anthony Stevens participated in Metro TV, and it is our Department of Customer Service, Communication, and Marketing that established this TV show just to highlight certain things that happen on the rail system, and then they have a segment called Beyond Barriers, where they interview a person with a disability to talk about riding Metro, and it's pretty much an open type of conversation. So this time, our very own superstar, Brianna Berger, was the one who was actually interviewed for the Metro TV. So Brianna, if you wanted to share your experience a bit while I queue it up for members to see, that would be great.
If you're from the other side of the terminal, then fine. So Rachel was the interpreter also out in the media. So yes, he was from the media. So it was filmed in the beginning of February at around 8 a.m. on a Monday morning. It was 25 degrees outside, and I couldn't wear gloves. And I was doing the American Sign Language to communicate. So I was freezing while we were doing the interview.
On this edition of Metro Focus, we're exploring county culture with visits to Prince George's and Montgomery counties. We'll take you to a few destinations both known and not so well known. We'll take you on a behind-the-scenes visit to our Land Rover bus division. And finally, we'll offer you a unique perspective from a rider's point of view. All this and more on this edition of Metro Focus.
Okay, sorry about that. I didn't have it. I said I needed to queue it up and didn't quite have it together. So if you
can
give me a moment to queue it up, I was going to handle that. Thank you for the advice. So you can tell your experience.
So it was 25 degrees outside and I was freezing. You can't tell the CEO, but there's a lot of white smoke, you know, because it was cold, you know, the smoke was coming out of my mouth, and it was very, very cold. So it took about 45 minutes to film me, and I used the American Sign Language the whole time, my voice off. So here, the interpreter, she was able to voice for me. So I'm very impressed with the way that they were able to figure out how to make sure that the right sign matches the voice over it. So that was a very nice overlay. So would further ado,
Cheryl, do you want to have a comment?
I also like saying very cold.
Cheryl, can you get on the mic?
I just want to add that it was very cold and very early.
Is that on full screen?
I'll try. I'm not sure if I have a feel for that, but I'll try. And I'm going to skip it in between because I want to give you the first part and then work you around to the piece where Brianna is actually speaking. So hold one second.
On this edition of Metro Focus, we're exploring county culture with visits to Prince George's and Montgomery counties. We'll take you to a few destinations both known and not so well known. We'll take you on a behind-the-scenes visit to our Land Rover bus division. And finally, we'll offer you a unique perspective from a rider's point of view. All this and more on this edition of Metro Focus.
So now I'm just going to advance it to the piece where our superstar starts.
45 more.
Just give me a moment.
Yeah,
right there. Here.
My name is Brianna Berger. So this is my husband and my daughter here in Washington, D.C., and we have three daughters as well. I'm a federal government employee currently. My specific field of work is disability affairs. Make sure there's equal access to the workplace, equal access for education. I also was appointed for the WMATA Accessibility Advisory. And that council meets monthly. They have a select group of people from Maryland, D.C., and Virginia who are Metro system users and people with disabilities, whether it's mobility, wheelchair users, people who are blind or low vision, deaf, hard of hearing, all of that. We have people represented on the council. And we advise WMATA how to make the metro system more accessible for people with disabilities. So my role on the council is to really advocate for, like I said, written communication and visual communication for people who are deaf or hard of hearing, any of the customers who fall in that category. Most days there's no problem with the metro. I can get where I'm going easily, just a regular commute for a regular rider. But the days when there is some kind of breakdown or delay or anything like that, especially if there's single tracking, I get on a train and all of a sudden it's going the opposite way of that I expected. And I see people, you know, moving over, and I don't know why people are making those decisions on the platform because I don't have any information. You know, most of it comes over public announcement systems, and that goes right over my head because I can't hear. So communication is very, very important. Here in Washington, D.C., there's a very large deaf and hard of hearing community, and I think people don't realize maybe that there are that many deaf people using the system and people who are affected by the same communication needs that I have. So other passengers, talking to that point, obviously, if you're deaf, it's what's called an invisibility. People don't look at me and know I'm deaf. And so often passengers just assume I'm a person who can hear, unless they see something like if they can see I'm using hearing aid, or if I'm signing with someone else who's deaf, then they realize that. But for me, it's a little bit of a challenge because the passengers don't really help out in terms of information. And so sometimes, again, if people are leaving the train or something, I'm trying to figure out, am I supposed to be following everyone? What's going on? So I grew up in New York City, and then I lived in Boston. So I have really only lived in urban environments, and I'm very used to commuting via public transportation. I don't drive much because if you're going to drive around looking for parking, I mean, driving in the city, it's impossible to park in D.C. And where I live right now, there's absolutely no parking. So it's very important for me to have access. If you don't have a car, it's really important to use the metro.
On the next edition of Metro Focus, we're in the District of Columbia, exploring destinations both old and new.
So as in the past, I'll make sure everyone gets the link to this Metro Focus, and we hope you'll definitely share that information around. But we want to just give Brianna a round of applause for doing such a great job. The next thing, Mr. Chair, I just want to remind AAC members that the recruitment is open and it closes this Friday on the 15th. Anyone interested in completing an application is online. We have checked the link. It was crazy. I'm not sure what happened to it, but IT said they corrected it. So the link should be available to everyone. We also have hard applications out here in the lobby. If anyone here is interested in returning, you have to remember you need to complete an application if you were notified that your eligibility for membership was up. You need to make sure you complete an application and turn it in before the end. Any questions or thoughts?
Yes.
Yes, Charlie?
I have never seen Metro Focus before. And so I'm wondering, where does one find it?
It's new. We've had a couple of different ones. I'm sorry, Mr. Blake, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Metro focuses on cable access. It's like your cable access channel, your local cable systems. Again, the young lady you saw, the one who was interviewing Brianne, that's Joe Green, Jawana Green. She's the first person I also mentioned, came over from Baltimore like I did, and she's in charge of marketing, and she had the Respect Your Ride program, and that's, and back there we had a TV show similar to this on cable access where it talks about public transit and shows it in a different light. So if you have cable television, it would be on your cable access network.
Well, the reason I ask is because it is interesting, and I wonder, do you do audio description with it?
I haven't seen it over here, so I'll have to check on that. That's a very, very good and fair question. I'll have to admit it since I'm not there, I can acknowledge. I know we didn't there, but I think the technology was a challenge at the moment for a low-budget production like this. But I think it's a very fair question. I don't live in this region, so I actually have not seen it. If I were to guess, you know, again, we're being honest with each other. If I were to guess, I don't believe there's captioning at the moment, but you certainly can get you some information about that.
All right, next presenter is Mr. Jeremy Franklin, Acting Director of Customer Service. He's going to talk about the Lost and Found program opioids.
I'm sure we're waiting for you to come to So, I just know we've lost my balance. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm sure that's what we're doing. All right. So, the Lost and Found at WMATA is there are two parts to it. So, the Lost and Found for Metro Bus, Metro Rail, and other WMATA properties. If an item is lost in the system, then it gets collected. Either a customer may turn it in to an employee, or if an employee finds it in the system, then they will take it to usually the nurse station manager or Metro Bus when they'll take it back to the division with them at the end of their run. And it gets turned in there. It then gets placed into a lost and found bag, which is sealed and locked. And then after that, there's a daily run. The mail runners come and they collect those bags. And then they bring them out to Lost and Found, and the ones with the keys to them, so they remain sealed from the time they leave the division until the time they get to the Central Lost and Found location. And when they arrive at Central Lost and Found, we unlock and then we do an inventory, we pull all the items out, we get it logged into the CRM system, and then we start matching what we call found items, which is any item that we've found in the system, against lost item reports, which are where customers come in and they log their item that they've lost. So if we are able to match the two and there's a way for us to contact the customer, we'll reach out to them with a comment card or we'll give them a call or send them an email so they have your item and give them instructions on how they can come and collect it. If there's not any contact information, if we're not able to match a case and an item doesn't have contact information, we just have to wait to see if somebody contacts us to tell us that they lost that item. If so, then we'll return it to them. If not, then after 30 days, the items are destroyed, donated, or deposited. So if it can be donated to the Goodwill or something like that, then we'll do that. Cell phones, bikes, things like that, all get auctioned off. And then items that can't be donated or auctioned off, they just get destroyed, including personally identifiable information, credit cards, all this stuff. We have a huge shredder over there. It's massive. It takes oil to run. So we make sure that nobody's personal information is subject to being stolen. So that's the Metro Bus, Metro Rail system. Metro Access is a little bit different. If you lose an item on a Metro Access vehicle, then the company that is operating that trip will retain that item. You can call into us, and we will send a case over to Metro Access customer assurance. They can call and confirm that the item is there, and then they will contact the customer, tell them where they can collect their items, and they can go and collect it. Those items are not included in the central lost and found process for Metro. It's a separate process. So I think that's a really good high-level overview, but I definitely answer any specific questions people have about the process or any concerns about Lost and Found. I guess I should say it's located in Hyattsville at the Prince George, close to the Prince George's Plaza Station in Bellcrest Road. On the fifth floor there, we have all the inventory there, with the exception of bicycles, which are stored at a different facility. All right, any questions for Mr. Franklin? Charlie?
You were advertised coming, so I had an opportunity to think about what question I might ask. And to follow up to the question I had before relative to the keeping of statistics and information on the occurrence of problems that need addressing. And not just disability, I presume, but I assume your operation deals with everybody. So my question basically relates to whether or not Metro does this as a function of putting out fires or does it, is it a function of trying to find solutions to long existing problems so that they either don't occur again or occur within a latitude of acceptance, so that the incidence is so small that it doesn't rise to the level of real annoyance. So the bottom line is, and I'm sure you think about this as a customer service person, what, from your perspective, are the hot issues in customer service, and what actions have been taken that have had an effect to ameliorate them?
So, if I understood that question correctly, I think we switched tracks from lost and found to customer service complaints. Okay. So, I can speak to that, and then I can also talk if there are any questions about lost and found after. So, I think the top five complaints were shared with you earlier in this meeting, and I was not here for that, but I can tell you off the top of my head for Metrobus, they generally are unsafe operation and LA late, failure to service stop, and rude discourteous. And for Metro Rail, it tends to vary, but a lot of times you'll still see delays, rude and discourteous in there. So, yes, we mine that data every month. We produce that report, we share it. I personally hold a conference call with Bus and Rail every 2 weeks to talk about the complaints that have been sent over to them, the ones that customer relations was able to resolve in the first point of contact, and the different trends that we're seeing in the service complaints that are coming in. So, there's a lot of conversation and action that goes in to what comes out of the complaints. So we store all that in the customer relationship management system. There's a variety of reports that come out, not just the top five. And so management across the organization takes action based on what they're seeing coming out of those reports. So I think bus complaints in particular, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but I do know at one point, I looked at a report either last month or the month before, we're down, I believe, in double-digit percentages from the previous year. So bus has definitely been actioning and taking a lot of action on their complaints. Metro Rail, of course, you're aware that we're currently dealing with reliability issues. They're bothering our customers, and so unfortunately, I can't say the same thing about Metro Rail customers. Their complaints are up. But it gives us a good understanding of where our customers are feeling and the pain, and it's feeding the solutions that we're trying to drive in Metro Rail to help resolve some of the issues that customers are experiencing right now. So definitely, that information is used in a variety of ways, and we mine it quite regularly to get insights into how we can address those issues.
So is there any particular situation that you can think of that over your term have been reduced to the point that you feel really good about the fact that you got a whole lot of complaints coming in that level?
Speaking of broad-based categories of complaints, no, I don't think I can say to you that we've eliminated any broad-based category complaints. I can give you multiple experiences that I've had in resolving specific issues. One of the ones that I share regularly is at some point last year, we were looking at complaints, and I noticed that the 17 lines down in Virginia, it's an express line that runs from Pentagon, we're generating complaints that have something like 150 or 200 complaints per 1,000 passengers, which is an extremely high number. And that's functionally two things. One, those lines don't have a very high ridership, so whenever there's something that's impacting customers, it shows up quite significantly. But the problem is that the volume of actual complaints on those lines is low, and it's because the ridership is low. But by looking at it from a ratio perspective, we were able to see that something was going on those routes was causing some serious problems. And we were able to work with our colleagues in the bus to figure out that there were some staffing issues that were happening in the division that was running those routes, and we were able to get that corrected. Once we were able to bring that to their attention, and that dropped within a month down to what we considered significantly less, and it actually, that route stopped showing up on the top trending complaint reports after. Yeah, so that's one of the ways that I've seen that we use the data to resolve an issue that's having a very significant customer impact, but which may not have shown itself up in something like the top five reports. But in terms of, you know, if you're looking for, like, have we been able to eliminate rude and discourteous or something like that, no, I can't say that we have been able to do that. Just that we continue to use that data in multiple ways, and I think it bears itself out in, like I said, with bus complaints being down double-digit percentages. Those were across the board. It wasn't in one specific category. It was food disparities, failure to serve stock, continue to bust, and take a holistic approach to the complaints management, and have really been able to impact it across the board.
All right, I have a couple questions. First one, about how long would you say before you end up shredding these items? So about how long would do people have until they before they can retain their items before they're shredded? And then the second one, what are some of the most frequent items you all get?
Okay. So in the first question, we retain everything for a minimum of 30 days. So from the day we receive it, you have 30 days to come and collect the item before we get rid of it. Unless you contact us and tell us that there's some reason you can't collect it within that time frame, and we will hold it for an additional 15 days for you if that's the case, so you have time to come and get it. Or if you sign a release form and pay, we will ship it to you by FedEx and get it back to you that way. You can also have somebody else come and collect it if you sign that release form too. So we have a variety of ways for people who experience issues to get their items. But it is 30 days is the cutoff, and that's just, we have inventory management that we have to do. If we let it go any further than that, we don't have any place to keep it. So the second question was,
about what are some of the most frequent items you get for people like them that have lots of items? What are the most frequent ones you get?
The top two are keys and sunglasses, or eyeglasses. And then after that, cell phones, purses, wallets, and then book bags.
Yes, Ms. Brush.
I only mostly ride Metro Access, and his shawl I left on the bus one day, and it went into Lost and Found, and I really didn't know where I lost it. But one of the drivers saw it and said, "Nobody has that shawl, but Queen, it's hers." and they called me and said, "Queen, you lose your shawl." I said, "I sure did." And so they brought it to my house. When he got off, he brought it, but I understand that he'd be surprised with Metro Access. People notice you or watch you, and they know basically what is yours. And the same thing with the umbrella I had. It was like an African flavor to it. It was returned to me because they pay attention.
Well, there are excellent stories. It's always nice to hear when somebody goes along with you.
Darnish?
I ride Metro Access from that too. I have concerns about lost and found because there's no standard of operation between the different vendors that supply Metro Access in terms of your lost and found.
And I think I'm going to have to turn that one over to you because I can't really speak to you. Metro Access policies and lost and found.
I hate to say that. I feel like I'm circling it early. I'm sorry.
Okay, so let's turn it over to me. Well, we have three service delivery providers out in the service area, which is Diamond, Transdev, and First Transit. All three service delivery providers are told that they need to keep track of the items. They need to make sure that they take inventory of the items when they come in and then inform the person where they can pick the item up at. The customer can also book a trip to the actual garage location if needed to pick up their item. So we do not stipulate how, but we do tell them that they should take inventory of any lost and found items and make sure that they're returned to the customers. And normally the drivers do pay attention, as Ms. Rush said, and they pay attention to who rides their vehicle, and they know their normal customers, and sometimes what happens a lot of the times is they identify who it actually belongs to before we even have to try to search and figure out who it belongs to. So far, I haven't been called on any items that a customer's lost and they haven't been able to get them back, because if that was the case, I would get many calls.
Brianne?
You mentioned about auction of different items that sometimes you get in the lost and found. How do we find out about the auction of the other companies?
So the options are not, they're not like individual options. It's auctioned by huge lots. So if we auction off cell phones, I think it's like thousands of cell phones at once. Procurement runs that entire program in the department. If you want additional information about that, I can try to find that for you. I do believe there's a registration process for participating in the auction, but I don't know if there's any eligibility requirements around the eligible, other than it can't be a lot employee. So.
Any other questions for Mr. Franklin? Thank you, Mr. Franklin.
Happy day.
Well, we're about 40 minutes or better early.
Sounds good to me.
All right, Maggie. Yes, Ms. Rush.
Who owns the bus?
Who owns the
who
bus?
Who operates the bus?
The Prince George's County? Prince George's County Department of Public Works and Transportation, I believe that's what it's called. Oh, you mean which company?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I can find out for you. Email everybody to know.
Okay, now,
Mr. Fry believes it's Transmit.
Yes, it is. You go
on
them?
No, I really didn't. No, man.
Okay.
I'm not sure it was.
Who operates the ride one?
From my last knowledge, ride on is First Transit.
Okay.
I don't know if they changed contracts, but last time I was aware, it was First Transit.
Okay, so ride on is First Transit, and the bus is Transair. Well, I was here through the grapevine that starting today, the ride on is paying the drivers $17.50. And that's going to be a problem with Metro Access. We're going to lose a lot of drivers if the ride on is paying that kind of money. It's, they start at 13.
Okay, I would say not necessarily. It depends on the skill level of the operator. Everyone can operate a 40-foot vehicle, plus they also have a different stipulation as far as their medical card, and they would have to also obtain a CDL license with Class B endorsement, air brake endorsement, and passenger endorsement. All of those I have, and I used to be a tester for the state of Virginia for the CDL license, and there's quite a bit involved in getting that CDL license and holding on to it. Some of our drivers do not have the skill level for the bigger bus. I mean, some of them probably will move over, but some of the operators do not want to drive the bigger bus. But they do have to obtain quite a bit to be able to drive those buses because there will be a Class B CDL with all of the endorsements in mind. I'm not sure if everyone is aware, but to drive a Metro Access vehicle, it does not require a CDL license. It just requires a good driving record and have been in service for driving for 5 consecutive years.
Well, pretty soon, Ms. Rush, you'll have another option in Montgomery Prince George's County.
Okay, don't start.
No.
We've been trying to follow you in, but don't start.
Oh, I won't start. Let's adjourn.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, have a good evening.
Great job, Mr. Chair.